distraction. I didn't expect.
Okay. Hi there. I'm Brian. Brian Xia. I'm with EFC Santa Monica. We have a new church planting there, so we are kind of starting and struggling. So great for us. I'm the facilitator of this classroom, so I am supposed to make sure everything works. Hopefully it works. And we have this recording here, so we'll put it together, CD, so all the materials will be on a free CD after September 19th, so you can pick up that CD from the EFC bookstore that right across the street. You guys know that?
Yeah.
The patient, right? Okay, so this is classroom KM202, and the subject is classroom management, prevention, and the treatment of disruptive behaviors. So is everyone supposed to come here for this class? Okay, so welcome. And I guess you already know each other very well, so the class already started without me, so I just pass this to Terry, and then we can have a real start. So this one is red, so make sure it works.
All right. This, yeah. Like this is fine, right?
Yes.
Oh, one second. All right. Thank you, Brian, for getting, asking me where this. All right. Here we go. Again, my name is Terry. We're going to talk about classroom management. Basically, we're going to speak about behaviors from a behavior analysis point of view. Just a quick outline. So I'm going to cover a few things. First, I'm going to introduce the basics of applied behavior analysis. That includes the consequence of behavior, functions of behavior, prevention strategies. I'm going to have two clips of videos and also some inserts of Sunday school teachers' interviews to share with the, you know, their wisdom to share with you. The two videos total is about 20 minutes, so make sure we're going to have leave enough time for you to view that. Okay. So basically, just understand more first the principles a little bit, and then we're going to share some strategies so you can have some tools in your pocket, you know, when you start teaching. There you go. All right. So the basic assumption is that we are, behavior is based on three things, genes, history, and the current environment. Basically, what we can't do too much about the genes. You know, as a teacher, history, we might be able to do that a little bit, you know, just by when you start teaching, you start building your history with your student, or maybe you can understand the history of reinforcement of the child, how the child was reinforced in the past. But what we're going to do is focus on the environment. You know, when you're in a classroom, that's your environment, what we can do to facilitate desired behaviors and to reduce disruptive behaviors. Okay. So we look at behavior within the environmental context. So anything a person says or does, we call that a behavior. Okay, so something you can observe, something that you can probably define and you can measure in some way. So that's just a picture to illustrate the relations. Okay. So that kind of, you know, understanding that, that kind of allows us to determine or to understand the variables in the environment that's influencing the behavior. And we're going to look at what happens before the behavior, and we're going to look at what happens after. Okay. First, we're going to look at what happens after. We call that the consequence. So there are typically three types of consequences that influence learning. Or influence of behavior. Okay, one is called reinforcement, and then the second one is extinction, and the third one is punishment. We're going to go through each of them a little bit more. We're going to speak more about reinforcement because that's directly related to what we do to facilitate kids in learning. Okay. So again, look at what happens after the behavior. First, we look at reinforcement. Okay, what it means originally is just it's a general strengthening of a behavior. It's from you can understand it from this picture as reinforcing concrete as a way to strengthen the overall structure. If the concrete is not being combined with the reinforcing rebar, it will crumble or being crushed very easily. That's why you see those concrete slabs for your driveway. You know, even though the concrete slab is pretty thin, it's about only 4 inches. But, you know, you need to lay a grid of reinforcing bars here, so those concrete won't crumble or crack. Okay, so that's a general concept. So keep in mind that reinforcement will increase or strengthen behavior. Again, this is a definition. As a consequence, it's presented contingent on a behavior. And one important thing is the effect of reinforcement is that it will increase the future likelihood of that behavior. Okay. If you see a behavior continues to occur, that means it is being reinforced in some way. You know, either directly by you or in the classroom teacher, or you know, somehow by the peers. You know, we're just talking about the classroom environment, or even just the setting of the environment. Okay? And if the behavior was not being reinforced, it would occur less often or eventually just stop occurring. Okay? So that's why when we want to establish a new behavior, that child starts learning, right? We give them some, we teach them knowledge, we teach them a behavior. We want the good behavior to continue. That means in the beginning, we really have to reinforce it more frequently to make sure that it's stable. And now gradually you thin it out. You thin out reinforcement. It doesn't mean that we have to use reinforcement all the time frequently. That's only in the beginning when you want to establish, make sure it's consistent first. Right. Okay. Okay. When a behavior does not continue to occur, you might want to think about a few things. First is the consequence is not reinforcing. Or it's not enough. For example, if you ask a child to clean his or her room, it's probably a big task. And you say, if you clean your room, I'll give you $1. You know, that's probably not enough. You know, okay. If you want to do it that way, okay. If you want to say, if you clean your room, I'll take you to your, you know, we can celebrate, we'll go to your favorite restaurant, that might be more attractive, you know. So, I mean, it's enough, and that is reinforcing, that's something that the child wants, you know. The child really, you know, you're so busy, the child hardly ever see you, you know. Being with you is reinforcing, you know. He doesn't care about money, for example. Okay. Another reason is that other reinforcers for other behavior are more powerful. Okay, so you have a competition between reinforcers. Taking the cleaning the room, for example, is not cleaning your room reinforcing? It can be, right? You know, you don't have to exert effort to do that behavior. You can, instead of cleaning your room, the child just, just plays video games. And that video game, the reinforcing value of playing the video game is much greater than going out with you to eat, for example. Then you have a competing reinforcement. And the behavior doesn't happen, that means, okay, the child may want to do something that's even more reinforcing than going out with you. Okay, so that's one of the reasons why. Okay. Another thing is changes in current motivation. Our motivation changes throughout the time, or even with different people, different settings. The easier example is right now I'm probably very motivated to eat because I didn't have lunch yet. You don't want to say anything, but I did have breakfast, but you know, I didn't have lunch yet. I bought some nuts, by the way. Okay.
Go get an Xbox for you.
Okay. Oh, it's okay. Thanks. Oh, I got recorded. Okay, but you know, soon as I eat my lunch, I'm not motivated to seek out food, right? So my motivation changes. Okay. So if you offer me food right now, I'm probably more willing to do things for you, for example. One last thing is punishment or threat or a punishment may be overpowering. The behavior, this is talking about events or people can also, if that event or people have been paired with punishment for a while, that person becomes a conditioned punisher, for example. That means that person is in front of the child, but that person signals punishment, signals the giving of punishment. Like, let's say, I don't know, assistant principal walks on campus and, you know, the child sees him, you know, he's the guy who gives out detention or whatever, or just mark absence or tardiness. So that means he is conditioned, been paired with punishment for a while, so he himself becomes punishing. So he's unlikely to facilitate, you know, the learning of behavior or to cue the behavior to occur in that way. Okay. All right, let's move on. All right, reinforcement. Now we're going to look at was to facilitate learning, and to that's why we need to do reinforcement, is it will facilitate learning and decrease disruptive behaviors. Now we need to identify sources of reinforcement that are maintaining the behaviors. There are different sources of reinforcement. We'll talk about that later. One thing we're not going to talk too much about is this. That means source of reinforcement may come from within. That sometimes we can't really observe, we can't really tell, unless the child tells you. Okay? So maybe somebody will say, my love for God is a source of reinforcement. You know, but that is something that nobody can really do anything about too much, you know, if I don't share, if I don't talk about it. Okay. So that's something that we won't talk too much about, but in the video, the Sunday school teacher will share about that. Okay. Just quickly, a breakdown of types of reinforcers. So they are social, tangible, activity, edible, and sensory. So as a Sunday school teacher, you know, these are your tools. You think about these are different things that you can utilize. Social is probably that we use the most. You know, the praises, the smiles, you know, the welcoming gesture. That's something, actually your attention is probably something the child wants the most at a younger age. I mean, not, you know, teenager, sorry. So it all kind of individualized. So we're talking about younger kids. Tangibles, you know, at this, you know, younger age, they probably, you know, they really like stickers, maybe sometimes pencil. If, you know, they really work hard, they might want some kind of stationery, so that might, you know, be reinforcing. Activities, games, privileges, you know, helper, you know. Oh, you know, even, you know, something that you, I want to reinforce you by appointing you being my classroom helper. But some people, some teachers use it as a preventive strategy for a child who often engages in problem behavior. You know, just to change his motivation, we're going to talk about that too later, or sensory. You know, it's part of the activity, you know, it mostly deals with your sensory, your five sensories. But we'll not go into that, just, you know, so that you understand what that is. Another thing too, when you deliver reinforcers, you probably want to consider the quality and the quantity. You know, like an example I mentioned earlier, is it enough? Is it something that's working? So no one reinforcer fits all. So you'll probably find out some kids, they really want attention. Some kids, they don't want attention. So it's not, you don't really want to assume a typical reinforcer will work for everyone. You need to observe, kind of thing. You know, say, if I give attention, if the child comes to me more, or if I give attention, the child kind of like moves away from me more. So then you'll understand the effect, if it's working or not working.
Okay.
So what is differential reinforcement? Why do we need to understand it? This is what we teachers do a lot throughout the day. You are actually differentially reinforcing the kids throughout the day. What it basically means is you reinforce desired behaviors while you withholding reinforcement for disruptive behaviors. You know, one example here. Oh, now I get use the pointer. All right. Cool. Okay, so you have a situation that's antecedent. Okay, teacher is asking a question. And the behavior that you want to help teach or increase is raise your hand. And you probably have that in your classroom rule too. Raise hand when you talk, you know, or, you know, before you talk. Okay. Raise your hand. You have 10 to 15 kids, you know, some raising hands, some just shout out, me, or, you know, pick me. And then right now as a teacher, your differential reinforcing is, okay, you only reinforce the hand raising behavior. You just call, Johnny raises his hand, we'll just call Johnny to answer a question, okay, as reinforcement, and the future probability of behavior occurring will likely to increase. And for those who goes, me, you're probably not going to call. That means extension. In this case, attention, you probably just want to ignore. You, by not giving attention, it's called extension. We'll talk about extension a little bit later. Okay, so the effect is that this me behavior will likely to decrease in the future. Okay, one thing about extinction effect we probably will not talk too much about is called extinction burst. That means me behavior have been reinforced occasionally, so it's kind of hard to put it out. So in the beginning, the child will probably work harder or even shout it out louder, you know, or even more frequent just to see if he can get the attention from you, okay? So that's called extinction burst. It's an increase of the behavior, but if you stay with it, you withhold your reinforcer, you'll gradually come down, okay? You just need to continue to do this, differential reinforce, and then at the moment, well, that's what I'm talking about. Of course, afterwards, you can do some other, you know, arrangement strategy to facilitate a good behavior. But at the moment, if you want to decrease the shouting out behavior, this is what you do. Okay? All right. So I'll come down to two other consequences. That's the extinction and the punishment. They'll happen after the behavior. Okay, these are the two ways to decrease the strength of a behavior. It's called extinction, which I'll just talk about. Another one is punishment. Punishment is something we understand how it works, but it's something we want to not do it so fast, not do it too much. You know, this is probably one of the last resort, you know, that you want to do. Or if you choose to do it, you kind of do something that's more, because some people, I think most people understand punishment as something really aversive that's happening after the behavior. You know, like when a kid is younger, 2 or 3, like spanking, or just put in a timeout chair, that kind of thing. Okay, that's called punishment. But we do more often in a classroom that is to, actually this one, not presenting aversive stimuli that much. But some teacher, I think, will do. We don't want to understand it from as applying aversive behavior that's causing physical pain or harm, okay? But you want to do it as it achieved its effect, okay? But it's not a physical punishment, okay? Some people would just say, bring the child over to the side and remind the child gently, you know, you may call that debriefing, just so the child is aware, okay, this is not supposed, I didn't do quite well. Hopefully this will decrease the behavior in the future, but if not, then it's not punishment, it's not working, okay? Another way is removing desired stimuli, activities, or situation. One common way of doing this, if you have a token system, that's probably removing the tokens. Okay, you just earned 5 today. Sorry, you know, in the end of the class, you really did, disturb the class, and so by talking out loud. So I'm going to remove 1 token. So that's removing something from existing situation. And hopefully, by doing that, you want to decrease talking out, right? You want to decrease the behavior. Okay, so that's punishment. Okay, just a quick summary. So behavior is strengthened or weakened by its consequences. Whether behavior has been reinforced or punished can only be determined by future likelihood of the behavior. Okay, that's what I mean is that we don't really assume too much. We kind of have to see the frequency of behavior, if does it increase or does it go down, you know, by the consequence that you've applied. Okay? If you think it works, but, you know, the reality or the data shows it doesn't work, then you really need to change it. You can say, but other people say it works, or it works for other people's kids. You know, like, how come not my kids? But so you need to understand it's all individualized. Okay? All right, good. So that's our basics. Okay, now we'll talk about the functions of behavior. Why is this important? Is that we need to understand why the kids do what they do. And that is probably because we want to find out what's reinforcing to them. You know, when they do something, when they engage in a behavior, what kind of a result are they looking to happen? You know, that's what we call the functional purpose of behavior. Two category of that is, generally, it's to gain something or to get out of something. Yeah. Okay. Behavior happens for a reason, and you need to find out what's reinforcing the behavior. Okay. Does anyone have any question about this? You say, I don't agree. There are more categories. I do what I do not because of these two things. You know. You know, you can disagree, it's okay, but we're going to talk more about what that is, you know. It's like, my life is not that simple. What's, you know, motivating me? It's not just those two things, right? But, okay. But those are the general categories. Okay, now I explain what that means. Okay, to gain something can include gain social attention, tangibles, activities, sensory stimulation, okay? You pretty much think about what we do, pretty much all fall into those four things, you know, if you want to gain something. You know, this is taken for the Facebook thing, the social attention, and, you know, from your friends. And these are the tangibles. Okay, another one is to get out of something. Work demands. The tangibles also include money, or we can call that a tangible include money, and also not tangible ones or more natural ones. We sometimes want to say, I not only work for money, and I work for a sense of accomplishment. I work for, you know, a sense of growth. Okay, that's also working to gain something in that category. Okay. Okay, but back to this one, to get out of something, work demands, get out of work. I mean, you know, we need vacations, social interactions. Again, some people really don't like to go to parties. You feel awkward, you know, everybody's chit-chatting, and you don't know what to do, so you're in a corner. So, and try to get out of, you know, the social situation. Sensory stimulation, we scratch because we want to get out of that itching feeling. We don't, that's aversive, so, you know, we scratch to get out of it. So that's example. Okay. Another one is just to talk about what the behavior looks like. the reason why we talk about this is that sometimes, let's talk about this. Common disruptive behaviors in the classroom are these things: off task, talking out, leaving seat, poking out, or putting head down, or non-compliance. We're not talking about severe behaviors, like damaging properties or hurting people, hurting self. We're not at that level, you know. But we do deal, have to deal with those situations, you know, in my job. But we're talking about these, we call more minor behaviors in the classroom. The reason I'm talking about form and function is that these behaviors, again, maybe talking out, for example, can serve more than one function. Sometimes talking out can serve as a function of the child trying to get your attention. Sometimes talking out may serve the function of trying to get out of doing work. Okay, so that's why we need to understand them separately. Okay, and two or three similar behaviors may serve the same function. For example, talking out, leaving seat, poking others may all serve the function of getting out of work. Okay. But if you understand what a child is trying to do, it's easier for you to come up with some strategies. Okay? Yes. Okay. Again, two common functions of disruptive behaviors in the classroom are to get attention and to get out of work. By the way, I hope you like these pictures I got from the internet. I try to get something that's close to what we see in our classroom. Okay. All right. Okay. I want to talk quickly about the alternative behavior. Another important thing about understanding the function of the behavior is for the disruptive behavior, is once you understand what the child is trying to do, then you can teach an alternative behavior that serves the same function. Okay. If a child, for example, if a child wants to get attention by, you know, just talking out, you can teach a child to raise hand or ask to participate or other ways that the child can engage in, knows how to do. You don't want to design something that's too hard for the child, so the child cannot acquire that behavior. Or another one is to teach waiting. Sorry, I cannot give you attention right now. Please wait. Okay, first, probably wait 5 seconds, and you go, you know, attend to the child, thank you for waiting, and then gradually increase that time of waiting. Okay, that's called shaping, which we're not talking about it today. That's another behavioral strategy. To get out of work, you teach asking for breaks and for help. For this, you probably want things, another reason why you want to understand the function, you don't want to come up with the wrong strategy. It's like, for example, using timeout if the child wants to get out of work. And you go, okay, you go timeout. And the child goes, oh yeah, you know, way to go. I gotta take a break, you know, that kind of thing. Okay. That's if you want to give the child a break. Okay. But that's because you understand what you're doing. You know, because you think timeout is going to work, you know, to decrease the behavior. Like a child's goofing off, you know, like taking off his shirt or whatever, you know, or telling jokes. You go, oh, you go timeout, and you think the child is trying to get attention, but he's actually trying to get out of work. So, oh, yeah, that works. I'm going to do that next time, you know. So the teacher won't ask me to work. I'm just going to go sit outside and just, you know, take out my phone and just have a good time. So. All right. Okay. How are we doing on time? Okay, good. All right, prevention. This is probably the, how do you say, I'm going to spend more time talking about prevention. We want to focus more on this. Because it's something that we can arrange, that we can learn what to do. So, if you wanted to apply consequence all the time, that's probably a little more effortful or more tiring. Sometimes you will disrupt the flow of your, you know, of your instruction, of your class activities. So you probably want to focus, look at this two. Okay, not to say that consequence is not important. Okay, we want to talk more about antecedent. Okay, so before you go, I hope you can remember these three things when you think about prevention. That is to, you're going to examine what cues the behavior, what's setting out the behavior, what's in the environment that's cueing the behavior to happen or trigger the behavior to happen, and how much is the response effort. You know, if you see somebody engaging in a problem behavior, you want to think about these three things. What's the response effort? And the third thing is motivation. How can I change the motivation so that the child is less likely to engage in problem behavior and more likely to engage in desired behavior? Okay, so these three things. Okay? This right here. All right, so what's the cue of behavior? It actually, it's only in our environment a lot of, we call that discriminative stimulus that's cueing the behavior. It's a stimulus that occasions the behavior that produces reinforcement. Okay? For example, traffic light, you know, we learn to obey traffic light because if it turns red and we stop, and the result of that is safety, right? I don't go across the street and get hit by the car. Okay, so that produced some sort of reinforcement for me. And the green means go. You know, yeah, if I obey that, you know, I go, I just get to move on, you know, smoothly. And another person can be a cue of behavior too. That's why we're going to talk more about you as a teacher when we want to establish you as a cue of behavior and how we're going to do that. Okay, for example, you go to see doctor and, you know, of course, doctor give you reinforcement. It relieves your pain, you know, it provides comfort for you. So the doctor, the person also signals the reinforcement. Okay? And also time, you know, time can be a cue for behavior. Say, we don't know, I don't know, your K-drama or your TV time is. Every time it's 9 o'clock and I turn on my TV, I get to see my favorite TV show, it's Kang Xi Lai, for example. I mean, one of my shows, and that is not okay. So a time 9 o'clock comes, you know, accuse me to do a behavior. I mean, to turn on the TV, okay, and I enjoy the show. That's the reinforcement. So we arrange these things ourselves, right? That's called self management, which is another topic of applied behavior analysis. If you're ever interested to study applied behavior analysis, okay, here we go. Okay, another cue of behavior. This is how I kind of break it down. Why is this important? Teacher, you actually cannot sell yourself, you know, like the doctor as a cue of desired behavior. And set up classroom instruction or rules. That's another cue of behavior. You know, very common with teachers set up classroom rules. And your classroom instructions also does cue the behavior. That's why you need to get prepared. You know, if you don't have, you will not prepare, you don't know what you need to dish out, you know, to cue the students to engage. Okay? And to decrease disruptive behavior, you identify and you rearrange the cue. If you figure out what's cueing the disruptive behavior, and you can do something about it. Okay, for example, I think this is a common strategy. If a student is, let's say, engages, or he's a cue of disruptive behavior, rearrange seating or remove the item. For example, this item is the problem. Okay? All right. Any questions? Sorry, I forgot to ask you, like, throughout. Okay, maybe we'll have time to do that Q&A in the end. All right. How do you do that? How do you establish yourself as a cue of desired behavior? Okay, first you need to look to praise students. Focus on the positive. be reinforcing to the children. So when you are in the classroom, kids go, yay! You know, yay! Teacher Annie is in the classroom. Or if you come into a classroom, the students are like, oh, feel good. All right. Okay. Your attention is very valuable. Okay. That means you are a reinforcing person. You know, you have smiles, you praise the kids for doing well, and you encourage them. You set up the classroom activity really nicely so they don't feel like they're wasting time. They're, you know, they engaged in the activity smoothly. Okay, so it's a reinforcing environment, and you are reinforcing to them too. Okay, here we go. Okay. This is something, if this scenario could happen, right? Like, student argue with you. Why do I need to do this? Why do I need to do that? Okay. I probably suggest you not to argue, but just simply just say your expectation again. And you can refer back to the rule. Again, you probably need to stay calm and cool. One of the reasons is that, believe it or not, your mood will affect your students' responses. Okay. If your face goes, they're going to go, oh yeah, all right, you know, that's what I want to do so that we don't have to go on with the class, so that kind of thing. So, yeah, you probably want to keep cool. And also for kids, your calmness is your sense of security, strength, and stability. Okay. All right. Another one is that you probably want to do is to just to ignore. You don't always have to apply a punishment procedure. You can simply ignore. You just you apply extinction. You know, for minor behavior, is ignore it. You know, we talk about here whining, disrespectful behavior when you can. Kids will say, "I don't want to do this. No fun." Rolling eyes or dropping things in your face. I actually put this because this has happened to me. The first day I walked into this third grade classroom, there was, I had my hands with blocks and my, you know, and all my teaching materials and all the reinforcers or whatever. And the kid just said, "Oh yeah, let me see what you have." And this girl just come and also look at stuff. And I go, "Okay, it's time to start the class." And this girl just, you know, just look at me like that, you know, kind of contempt, and then just, you know, throw the stuff, just, you know. Or, you know, it's like, normally if this was my child, I would probably need to address it, right? It's like disrespect, right?
Hopefully that's not my child.
Oh, no, definitely not your child. Your child, very good. Okay, so it's like, keep calm, keep cool. If I could feel that thing rushing up, it's, you know, let it go down. Okay. So I just, you know, I didn't really pay attention, or I didn't say anything. I didn't even really look at the kid. You know, I just picked up the stuff and just move on with my classroom instruction. And that girl did that similar things a couple more times. Maybe third class, you know, she didn't do that anymore. You know, some people would call this a cold testing, your limits kind of thing. Of course, during that project, and I know, okay, this kid, I need to figure out what I can do. So I try to really have my eyes open and see what I can reinforce her, what she's doing well, and hopefully offset that, you know. Okay. Okay, and this is just another thing you can say. If you can't really ignore, or you can just say, "I understand, I see, I'm sorry." Yes, you know, sometimes we have to say this to our spouse too, like, "Sorry, I understand, I see, but I can't, you know, do anything." All right, okay, here we go. Okay, now we go to classroom instructions, materials, and rules. Many times we set up the rules, but we forgot to reinforce our rule too. That means some kids are very good at following rules. But some kids, because they have a history of following rules that produce good results, so they will do that with you. But that doesn't, you don't want to take that for granted. You know, you want to make sure kids are reinforced once in a while. Okay. So this is what classroom instruction and material. I said that earlier. This is actually your class instruction material. You need to get ready, right? You come in, you don't want to fumble through things. You know, kids are everywhere. So you need to be ready to give your verbal instruction, you know, your teaching materials ready, your worksheet, whatever, all, you know, printed, whatever nicely, your pens and pencil are all ready to go. And you plan out your classroom activity, new reinforcers. And this could probably take you how many hours of preparation time? Probably quite a few hours, right? And you want to kind of memorize the whole sequence in your head. And of course, you can write down the rundown on the board. You know, when you walk in, we're going to do these things today and help you, cue you to do your activities. But almost you have to be very, fluent in delivering your presentation. Okay, so rules. Okay, it's specific activities related to a particular context. That means, in this case, it's our classroom. Okay, rules better be short. It's better learned if they're short and clear, and you deliver with positive tone of voice. Okay, here are some guidelines. And you make rules that are acceptable to both teacher and student. You can ask for their input. It's suggested that you begin each rule with an action word, you know, raise your hand or walk quietly, for example, if you get up, you know, to do something. It's probably don't want to write too long. Okay, just clear and concise. Say rules in positive terms. That means do this, and not so much of don't do this, don't do this. If don't do this, I don't know, what do you want me to do, right? Do you want me to sleep? That's don't do, you know, that. Okay. Focus on rules, observable behavior that can be taught. You want to relate your behavior rules to work and safety. So raise your hand, that's work-related. Safety is, some teacher will come up with, what's a safety rule? Walk slowly or walk quietly, that's a safety rule. Okay. Or keep the number of rules small. How many rules do you usually give for your class? If you have more than three, raise your hand. You probably all have less than three?
No. Five?
Five or more? If you have five or more? 5 to 10? Okay. No rules? I'm the rule, right? Okay. Okay, so the suggestion that if you post it, you know, that's also to cue their response. It visually cue their response. So that's why we need to post it out. Okay. Because sometimes kids forget. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Look at that. It's on the board. You know? So. Okay. Another thing is called response effort. That means the amount of effort required to engage in a behavior or to perform a task. Why is this relevant? You probably want to look at, is this too hard for this child to do? Is the task presented too hard? What can I do so that the child won't, engage in an escape behavior? So, okay. If the task is too hard, then you should adjust the difficulty levels too. Yeah. Okay. Another thing is that, you increase the effort to in disruptive behavior. That means to separate the seating of the two students. You know, like Johnny and Jack, they just. Really, really, if they sit close to each other, if you let them pick their own seat, they'll probably just sit next to each other and feed off of each other, and then they'll growing the big commotion or something like that. And of course, you can see them, you know, at two different ends. So, you know, you increase the effort of them talking to each other. All right, and this is, okay, now let's talk about the third key factor, that's the motivation. Let's try to say, do it in two ways. I'm a little running out of time. Okay, let's go a little faster. Okay, first, you think about increased motivation for desired behavior. Two, you think about decreasing motivation for disruptive behavior. Okay, just think about these two big things. And these are all some of the ways, tools you can use to do that. Okay? You can use a variety of reinforcers to increase motivation. And you structure higher preferred activity after lesser preferred activity. That means if the child is less, it's not that, you know, motivated to do the paper, you know, the sheet work, right? You ask them to write down their name, they have to answer question on the sheet. If they're less likely to do that, but they are more motivated to do, let's say, arts and craft project, or even you design a Bible verse puzzle game, for example, or you do a group, a drawing project together to illustrate a Bible story, for example. And that, if that is high, more preferred, you save that for later, okay? And that will, that means for the lesser preferred activity will more likely to occur, okay? So you purposely arrange it this way, okay? So the child has something to look forward to. And also another thing is you can do a good behavior game. Have you guys tried that in your class? We'll talk about that. Another one is work with peers. Okay? Okay. All right. Okay, here is an example of using a variety of reinforcers during instruction. That means you can set up group contingency for all individuals, for all of your students. So some of you might have used this before or heard something like this being used. Is teacher tell the students what the behaviors are expected, and you give out tokens. You know, it can be marbles or a piece of candy to the students when they are engaging good behaviors. And towards the end of the class, for example, or the end of the day, they can have that token to exchange in something they like, you know, like an activity or something like a party, for example. And you can use the marble over there. I brought a little jar here. And you can mark your jar. This is a smaller jar. You know, you can have your own bigger jar if you want. And you can have two markings. That means you can use candies or marbles. You know, probably kids, they probably don't want to eat this. When you get it, they'll probably put it in. But if you have a really nice candy, they'll probably eat it up. Okay, my point is that you can set your criteria in different levels. So it's easier for them to achieve. Let's say if you, you can figure the child can probably achieve this in one day, for example. And this probably, you know, if it's a bigger jar. And the second marking will signal, okay, if we achieve this, we'll have a bigger party. But if we achieve this, we'll have a smaller treat, you know, for example, everybody. Okay, so visually, child can see, and they're motivated. And they will say, hey, come on, you know, they can facilitate each other in contribution. So, all right, that's that. And this is the structure of the activity I talked about earlier. For younger children, you know, for younger children back there, or over there, or here, they need lots of movement, so, and changes in activity, so, so you probably want to structure the activity that requires attention more in the beginning, you know, and towards the end or later you structure activity that, you know, so they can get out, get up and do some motions or movement activities. For younger kids, you'll probably remain active yourself. So good for you guys, you are younger kids. All right. Okay. This is a good behavior game. It's basically, again, you can divide your class into two or more teams. You can have the team 1, team 2, team 3, team 4, for example. Each team maybe have, you know, two or three kids. And then you can you can either reinforce the non-occurrence of the disruptive behavior, or you can reinforce the occurrence of desired behavior. Okay? And then you can put a mark on your chart, and then the points will be tracked on this visual chart. Okay, and you get to see, each team will see, oh, you do, how well are you doing? Okay, so keep them focused. And then, of course, you reinforce them in the end. Okay. This is kind of an explanation of the group behavior game. Okay, first thing is you probably want to, the incentive must be something that's worthy, not something too small, otherwise they won't care about, they won't care for. You know, they're rather steep, they don't want to earn those reinforcers. Okay. And again, the price, you know, doesn't have to be expensive or tangible, it can be a privilege, it can also be an activity, you know, like watching a video, or even have an earlier recess. Okay, each team can have early reset, you can have your corner, you can do your reading, you know. I know some kids really like to read and have their book. They pull it right out and just read and have a chill time. Okay. Okay, here we go. All right, okay. Thinking about motivation. Okay, what can you do to decrease the motivation to engage in disruptive behavior? These are probably the three things that you can do. Use proximity monitoring. That means supervision. Another one is provide choices. A third one is called non-contingent reinforcement. Okay. We'll talk about each of them. All right, here. Use proximity monitoring. It's a proactive supervision. It also assists students who are having difficulties. Okay. Some kids engage in disruptive behavior because I think most of the time is that they don't know how to do your task. There is a portion of students who, because the levels are a little different. Some kids are more advanced. They can really write nicely. They can even come up with a paragraph story. I mean, talking about my third grade class. And some kids are even having difficulties just writing a couple of sentences, you know. You know, one or two sentence versus a paragraph, that's a big difference. So if you have a teacher say, or a classroom mate, that's nice, or, you know, or you can just, you know, physically close to the child, you know, like using Brian, for example, you know, if the child is talking, and if you just walk right next to the child, you know, just make sure, okay, you know, yeah, eye contact. You know what I mean, right? You know what I mean? Okay. Then he's fine, less likely to engage in disruptive behaviors, okay. All right, so you can see teacher walking around a classroom. That's not uncommon. It'll provide choices. This is probably helpful to students who want control, you know, like they act out because I don't have a choice. Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? And then, you know, you can give choices. You want to do A or do B, you know. Actually, you are still providing the choices within your own, you know, discretion. You know, you're not giving the total freedom to the kids, right? So the kids have some control, and you have the control too. Okay. Non-contingent reinforcement. This simply means you're giving student access to reinforcer frequently enough that they are no longer motivated to exhibit disruptive behaviors. Okay, let's say the functions get attention. You really give him a lot of attention before he even engages in a disruptive behavior. For example, you kind of figure, okay, maybe 15 minutes into the class, this kid will start to, you know, talk, act out, or wants to teacher this, teacher that, right? Okay, so you know this kid wants attention. So before that 15 minutes, you know, you will probably give the kids more attention. Oh, how you doing, Johnny? You know, oh, that's nice work, for example. Okay. And then, you know, you can give more attention before that 15 minutes. Oh, you anticipate that time coming up. Okay, that's the strategy. But understand you must know why first, why the child is doing that. You know, if a child is talking out because he wants to get out of work, you go in there to give him attention, where he doesn't help. Okay. All right. Okay. So another one is get out of work. Is you probably want to remove the demand or present modified work with help. Okay, In our field, we do a lot of modified work because our kids, a lot of times need on-the-spot modified work. You know, kids' curriculum is pretty much all the same, right? But design is all the same. It doesn't consider your level of ability, basically. So if a child who really needs help, then you probably need to modify on the spot. Okay, that's what it is. Oh, video! Oh, that's loud. Video one. Okay. Sorry, we're probably going to run after the time, so if you want to leave early, you can. So the rest of the presentations is our videos and the sharing of our Sunday school teachers. I have three Sunday school teachers who did the videos. First is Morris. Morris Chan, the CM elder. Another one is Ruth Kuo, CM director. And the third one is the Montessori director, Amy Liu. It's a little louder. Is there no? That's the best. What happened?
Some problem with the video one. Yeah.
What?
I don't know.
Sorry,
we couldn't copy from your fast track to my hard disk, but I guess the video too is okay.
Can you try directly from my disk? Try to play it from my disk?
Yeah, that's what I did.
You did?
Yeah.
And you just stopped?
Yeah. No, it just stopped by itself.
Okay. So are you sure we'll try one more time?
You want to try one more time? Yeah, this is yours.
Well, my name is Morris Tien.
Right.
I've been teaching at UCLA for many, many years, actually probably over 10 years. Currently, I'm the elder for the children's ministry. So I've taught, you know, from first grade all the way to fifth grade before. And, you know, to answer the question of how to prevent this behavior, I noticed that usually in my class, you know, maybe have like one or two students that usually is the instigator, you know, the one that usually causes the trouble. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll pick out those two, I'll keep an eye on those one or two students that usually don't want to cause trouble, and I'll put them very close to where I am. In other words, I'll make sure that they don't really get too much out of hand. And if they become too disruptive, what I usually do is, you know, I'll just take them to the side, you know, away from everybody. I'm just going to talk to them real quietly and put them back. And then another thing what I'll do is, you know, if it's not possible for them to be right next to me, like for instance, you know, I go to class and the seats are really taken up front, is I will have them switch seats with somebody else. Like I'll separate the two that are causing, you know, the problems. And for the most part, it usually solves the issue. That's pretty much what this part. What I do, handle it afterwards. What I usually do is, if they really start being disruptive, like when I say they won't do it now, what I tell them is, those of you who don't behave, I'm going to speak with you after class. So I want you to advance. Okay, if these students behave, I'm going to hope.
What happened?
Okay. Alright, sorry about that. Yeah, okay then. Let's try video two then. Okay. The video two is about motivation. Video one is about the prevention strategies and what, you know, the consequence.
One of the things I try to do to encourage and motivate kids is one of the things that I realize is you cannot have a classroom where you do all the talking and you just sit there and listen. For kids, that it's not going to work. You know, their attention span is not that, you know, long, and not going to get empty. So what I like to do is I like to
stop the recording and push and
something like that, just sitting there and listening.